Ever happened in the history of entrance music. Again, shout out to Zeke for hooking it up with that song. He just sent it to me out of the blue. He's like, hey man, look, this is your new entrance song. There's no debate. There's no discussion. You know it's right. I know it's right. Do it. This is the right one. God damn it, was he correct. And shout out to Gucci Mane for making that song. I can't believe I had never heard of it before. But I mean, I guess I never heard of it because I don't think he's actually talking about the political left. I think he's talking about his left hand. Like, I'ma hit you with the left. Like, left hand, haymaker, like, throw a punch. Anyway, I got a huge, gigantic, tremendous, colossal, monumental show for you today. So I don't even know why I'm fucking around here. I don't even know why I'm talking and it's not about the stories yet. I mean, that's fucking crazy. So, little tease, we got Noam Chomsky later on in the show. We got a bunch of Bernie Sanders stories. I think there may have been a political leader who passed away. We got a lot to say about that. In fact, obviously, I'm going to lead with that. That's the huge story. Fidel Castro, dead at 193. So we'll talk about that. And we will talk about much more. So sit down, relax, buckle up. I got some religious fundamentalists later on in the show that'll interest you, methinks. All right, so let's get started here. Fidel Castro is dead at age 312. No, it's age 90, but feels like it's 312. He ruled Cuba since the revolution in 1959, and there is a hell of a lot to say about him. So first of all, let me just say, when I heard the news over the weekend, and I was looking through my Twitter feed, it was facepalm after facepalm after facepalm. I think I had like a permanent red mark on my forehead through the weekend as a result of the sheer number of facepalms I did. Because, man, people are annoying. So they seem to fall into one of two camps. And maybe this is just the people I follow, and that's, you know, it is what it is because I follow political Twitter. But like half of them, or not half of them, probably like 60 or 70% of them, Fidel Castro was the worst human being that ever lived. He's Hitler, he's Mao, he's Stalin, he's every brutal, atrocious dictator, genocidal maniac ever. That was a lot of the Twitter feed. And that, by the way, that's the reaction I more expected when Fidel passed away. I would expect something more along those lines. But then, you know, there was the remaining 30% or 40% of people, or it was the opposite, where they would act like, no, he was angelic, and viva la revolution, and, you know, hey, he's the last great fighter against American imperialism. So I read all, I don't think I agreed with a single tweet from anybody on Fidel Castro. Because it was one or the other. It was like, okay, he's the worst person that ever lived ever, or he's really great, and he's misunderstood, and blah, blah, blah. So what's my take on it? Well, you're going to be surprised to know it's massively nuanced. Now, first, let me go ahead and give you a little bit of background information. So in 1959, he overthrew Batista, who was a dictator propped up and supported by the United States. So this is one of the reasons why I'm mad at the people who were totally unnuanced in the direction of he's the worst person ever, is that they don't acknowledge the most basic facts, which is he wasn't created in a vacuum. Fidel Castro was created because there was a brutal U.S. dictator who ran Cuba, Batista, and he did all the things that people are mad at Fidel Castro for doing, he did too. But you don't hear those people talk about Batista. In fact, many of them don't even know who the fuck Batista is. They just rant against Fidel, and they're like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. Before Fidel, it was like a flourishing democracy. No, it was a fascist dictatorship, and the guy did, you know, torture, and he did extrajudicial killings. And actually, here's an interesting fact. Fidel actually tried to go to court to get Batista out multiple times, and he lost in court. Now, did he lose in court because he actually had a losing case? No, he lost in court because he was a fucking fascist dictator, Batista, who ran the country. And so eventually they had a revolution. So if people call it a coup or people act like, oh, well, he shouldn't have done it, that's where I disagree. I would have done a fucking revolution if I was living in Cuba at the time. You have a fascist dictator, foreign imposed, who's jacking your country's resources and giving it to America. It's just an imperialist puppet nation, and the people there are getting screwed. Now, then, of course, the question becomes, what about everything that came after the revolution? That's obviously where, you know, you get into huge issues with Castro for many reasons. So Castro overthrew a U.S.-backed dictator. But then, obviously, when he took control, he became a dictator, and he fiercely and swiftly cracked down on dissent. So this is the aspect of communism and totalitarianism that is just fucking indefensible, where you have this centralized state, by the way, command economy, centralized economy. You quite literally for a long time until very, very recently had zero private industry there. So there's no such thing as a small business. You couldn't run a small business. Everything was technically owned by the state. Look, I massively disagree with that. But he cracked down on dissent. So if you were somebody who was like a media figure who went after him, forget it, you're put in a political prison or you're killed. If you're somebody who's a political opponent who actually wants to take power from him, oh God, forget about that too. There's no way that that's happening. And obviously he would kill you, he would torture you, all those things. So that, look, a lot of the oh my God, he was a brutal dictator angle of this stuff, that's true. That's totally true. So and I'm going to give you my, you know, my overall breakdown on what I think he is at the end of the segment here. But some other horrific things he did, he also fucking did internment of the LGBT community. That's super random and horrific for somebody who's like a communist, like, you know, somebody who's an authoritarian leftist. Typically that doesn't fit into the ideology of being massively anti-gay, but apparently he was. So, yeah, in many ways, he was a brutal dictator. Now, the things that those people are not telling you, though, the people who are just, you know, cackling hyenas who are jumping on the bandwagon to say he was equal to Hitler, is that under Fidel Castro's rule, Cuba achieved over a 99.7% literacy rate, which is literally one of the highest in the world. The United States, for example, is way behind that. So now, again, you can say, hey, that's a tiny point. I get that. All the facts matter. So some more information. Obviously, he gave everybody health care, and he actually made Cuba a doctor-churning factory. In fact, in Cuba, they end up giving more aid to developing nations than the top major nations combined. And they also have the highest ratio of, like, doctor to population size. So they just keep pumping out doctors. Now, lest you think, well, okay, but are they shitty doctors? Actually, no. Cuba actually created a lung cancer vaccine, and because of our ties with them not being good, we weren't able to benefit from that for a long time. I think recently they've been working on something where we also get the benefits of it, because recently Obama softened the line against Cuba. But this idea of, like, well, nothing good ever comes out of there because he's a bad leader and that's the end of the conversation. Well, here's something that nobody could argue against. Fidel Castro supported Nelson Mandela as the United States government officially backed the overtly racist apartheid system. So the U.S. government was lined up behind the racist white government in South Africa that had fucking gender segregation, apartheid, and Fidel Castro was like, no, we're with Nelson Mandela. So as the U.S. was calling Mandela a terrorist, Castro was saying, no, he's a freedom fighter. So again, super important fact, shows that in some ways he was ahead of his time. I mean, now obviously everybody goes, yeah, Nelson Mandela, only one of the best humans that ever lived. And also, here's an important fact. During Hurricane Katrina, Cuba actually offered aid to help the United States. They said, look, we're right here. We'll send you thousands of doctors. We'll send you aid. We see how horrible it is. We see the effects of it, and we want to help out. George W. Bush said no. He slapped it down, rejecting aid for people who desperately needed it in Louisiana. So, look, overall, mixed picture. What would I say, it leans bad or leans good? look, you got to keep it real, man. I think it leans bad. He was a fucking dictator. So I get on that alone. Like, I get it. Strike one, you're out. There is no two or three. You're a dictator. You know, you have total control over the country. Not cool, not acceptable. On the fact that he's an authoritarian and he cracks down on dissent, there's no fucking free speech. There's no, hey, let me hear your countering opinion. It's Castro or die, or Castro or get locked up. On that alone, I got you. Horrific. But you have to take everything into consideration and understand the overwhelming hypocrisy of the United States here. Because, for example, when King Abdullah died in Saudi Arabia, did you see the fawning statements that the U.S. government released and all these idiot pundits who just followed the U.S. government line? They called him a cautious reformer. A cautious reformer? Women can't drive in Saudi Arabia. They say all atheists are terrorists. They behead people for witchcraft and sorcery. I mean, this is insanity. Drug smuggling is something you get beheaded for. They're currently bombing the fuck out of Yemen and massacring civilians. They don't even care. I mean, they've backed Al-Qaeda, for fuck's sake. Aspects, elements in the government have backed Al-Qaeda. But when the king of Saudi Arabia died, oh, he's a cautious reformer, and he actually cares about human rights. I like how in the back screen you see things popping up. Growing pains, get used to it. But so that guy's a cautious reformer, but Fidel Castro, who was comparatively not nearly as brutal and bad a dictator, he's the worst thing ever. He's basically Hitler. But the other dictator who believes in Sharia and implements it, well, he's cool because he's on our side. So my point is, there is no, this idea that there's concern about human rights, this idea that, you know, the U.S. cares about altruism and we just want to help people out around the world and we're the world police, it's utter nonsense. It's more about geopolitics. It's more about business interests and our corporatocracy. So don't buy the line of, oh, no, the reason why the U.S. government is anti-Castro is because we care about human rights. Well, really? Then why'd you prop up Batista, the guy before him, who wasn't a communist dictator but a fascist dictator, and he did all the shitty things that Castro did? Well, all the torture, all the extrajudicial killings, all the things that we all rightly go after Castro for, you got to go after Batista for, and you got to go after, what, I don't know, a dozen regimes that we currently support that still do that shit? And then, motherfucker, we have Guantanamo Bay, which, by the way, it's not like there was a deal, and Cuba was like, oh, yeah, cool, no, take Guantanamo. No, we're illegally occupying Guantanamo Bay, which is theirs, to set up an extrajudicial prison where we don't give people due process, we don't give people rights, we've tortured people there, and as we do that, we lecture them about human rights. They're like, you stole an island that's ours, and you're torturing people on there as you don't give them a trial. So really, you want to have this conversation with us about human rights? Is that the conversation you want to have? Let's go down that road. Let's talk about it, because I'm pretty sure you're going to get your ass handed to you. You waged an illegal war against a country that didn't fucking attack you and killed hundreds of thousands of civilians. And now you're going to talk to us about, hey, look, man, your human rights record, little iffy. So no, overall, a negative character, a negative force, simply because he was a dictator and simply because he was authoritarian and he cracked down on free speech and political dissent. But I'm begging people, don't be an idiot. Don't do the false equivalence and say he's Hitler. Don't do the false equivalence and say he's Mao. You know, don't call him Stalin, because that's just not true, and you look like an idiot when you say something like that, because you basically bought hook, line, and sinker the U.S. government line, and you're disregarding all the decent things that he did. Now, again, I just told you, overall, negative character. But you can't. You have to look at all the facts. And I fucking hate the gross, sloppy, generalized, oh, it's just Hitler. Hitler cared about his people, too. You're saying Fidel cared about his people. He educated them, too. That's one of the ones I heard. Oh, really? You're going to say you're good because he did universal education? That's what you're going to say? You're going to bring that up in the conversation?
Yeah.
Well, Hitler did their education, too.
Hitler taught everybody, hate the Jews. You should kill people. You should be genocidal maniacs. What is that what they're teaching? I missed that. Is that what they're teaching in Cuba? Is that what Fidel taught them as they fucking had over a 99.7% literacy rate, one of the best in the world? Nope, they didn't teach that. They didn't teach that. So now again, you could say, hey, in some ways the things they taught were bad. They're teaching this communist ideology. I agree with you. But stop doing the false equivalence and saying that, you know, people who killed millions upon millions of people and had an ideology where they said, wipe out the Jews, like, oh, that's equal to a guy who was authoritarian in his crackdown on dissent. Both bad, one is worse. Again, nuance. Higher literacy rate, healthcare for everybody, developed a lung vaccine, was on Nelson Mandela's side when the U.S. had our fucking head planted firmly in our rectums. So look at the whole picture. Overall, I'd say he's a negative character for a variety of reasons. But just for fuck's sake, people, stop. What I hate is the pick a team, pounce away. Because you just expose yourself as the non-critical, unthoughtful thinkers that you are. Okay. All right, now let's move along here and talk about our bae, Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders went on CNN, and the host, Dana Bash, asked him an interesting question about Fidel Castro.
Joining me to talk about all of this is former presidential candidate Bernie Sanders and author of the new book, Our Revolution. Senator Sanders, thank you so much for joining me. Let me start with Cuba. In President Obama's statement on Fidel Castro's death, he said, quote, "We offer condolences to Fidel Castro's family and our thoughts and prayers are with the Cuban people." Is it appropriate for the leader of the free world to offer condolences of a brutal dictator who killed his own people as well as Americans?
Well, I think what we have seen in the last number of years is an improved relationship between the United States of America and Cuba. The United States of America has relations with China. We've had relations with brutal dictatorships all over the world. The goal right now is to see that we can improve our relationships with the people of Cuba, to do what we can to improve their economy, and to make sure that the younger generation does better than their older generation.
So you're okay with him offering condolences. If you were president, would you have said something similar?
Yeah. Yes, I would have.
Okay. The reason why this is noteworthy is how mind-numbingly stupid that question was from the host. Because you know what it shows? You have somebody who's just a stenographer for the government. So there's no critical thinking. There's no like, oh, hold on now. That doesn't make any sense. It's just, let me repeat whatever the people in power are saying. So she really framed the question as, is it appropriate for the United States to offer condolences to the family of a brutal dictator? That's what she said. Did she say that when King Abdullah died in Saudi Arabia? No, she didn't. Everybody across the board in the establishment was saying, oh, he's a cautious reformer. That's what Obama wrote, cautious reformer, a partner in the fight against terror, even though elements in his own government funded Al-Qaeda. And they implement Sharia, and they treat women as second-class citizens, and they behead people in the public square. And they say that it's a crime to do sorcery and witchcraft. And they say all atheists are terrorists. So, I mean, stop and think about that, man. I need you to stop and think about that. Look at the hypocrisy. It is disgusting. It is grotesque. It is... Let's broaden it out, too, because you want to talk about human rights violators. That's the crux of this question. He's such a human rights violator. Oh, my God. How can we say we feel bad for his family, by the way? It wasn't like, oh, him, he's so great, Fidel. It was like, oh, just saying, hey, the Cuban people, whoever, you know, are going to miss their leader, his family. Okay, like, we'd love to work with you, and we're here with you through this tough time. Whatever. Look at what we keep doing, for example, with Israel. We just gave him $38 billion. They're continuing expansion and apartheid and occupation. They keep taking more and more Palestinian land. And does anybody think for a second, like, oh, hold on, let's ask the president if it's cool that we're arming this regime as they continue to violate international law brazenly? No, nobody says that. Nobody says, whoa, really? You have kind words to say to them? Do you know what they're doing right now? Do you understand what they're doing right now? Nobody says that. Why? Because as far as her thinking goes, it's this. Whoever the government says are good guys are good guys. Whoever the government says are bad guys are bad guys. So the fact that, for example, we partnered up with, I think it was the leader of Uzbekistan who boiled people alive. Boiled people alive. I'm going to repeat that. Boiled people alive. We partnered up with that guy. Is that something she, A, knows? Probably not. B, if she did know, would she ask this question? No. She still wouldn't ask this question. Because the government has decided, you know what they called him when he died? A partner in the fight against terror. Sure, he boiled people alive, but we think they were the right people. So it's cool. It's cool. So they would never, they're not objective, and that's what drives me crazy. And you could sense Bernie Sanders, like, anger at the question, because he's like, what a fucking stupid thing to say. What a stupid thing to say. You acted like a normal human when somebody died and said, hey, I hope the family's okay. Is that really acceptable given what this person did? And then you wait. Just wait for it, wait for it, wait for it. Wait until Dick Cheney passes away, how they'll talk about him. Is Dana Bash going to ask that question of other... hey, Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, is it really acceptable to offer condolences to Cheney's family? Cheney, a guy who orchestrated the Iraq War, killed hundreds of thousands of civilians, set up a worldwide torture regime. Now we know, because it's been proven, the Senate torture report, we know that they didn't even torture people who were Al-Qaeda. They were totally innocent of any wrongdoing. Are they going to frame it like that? No, because when we commit atrocities, when we do human rights violations, it doesn't count. Why? Because we mean well, or I think we mean well, so I'm just going to say we mean well, and that clears everything. Well, you're not going to offer that same way of thinking to other people who are our enemies? You don't think, whether or not you agree with Castro's ideology, you don't think when he overthrew the U.S. propped up fascist dictator Batista in Cuba that he cared about the Cuban people? Again, all the nuance in the world for us and our allies, and all the kind words for us and our allies, and we're never human rights violators. For our enemies, you're the worst human rights violators ever. Compare the crimes of Saudi Arabia and Cuba, and then get back to me and tell me if this line of thinking makes sense. Because nobody asked, hey, with King Abdullah, is it really appropriate to say good things about him when he dies? When Castro died, they didn't even say appropriate. They said neutral things. Is it really appropriate to say neutral things when an enemy of ours dies? Is it really appropriate? But somebody who's worse, who's our ally, oh, they can do whatever they want. And cautious reformer. He was really fantastic, believe me. So, hey, Dana Bash, stop buying hook, line, and sinker the shitty, disgusting, irrational, contradictory arguments of people in power. You're a CNN host. You know what your job is? Your job is to hold those people accountable. Your job is not to take the propaganda and spew it back in the face of maybe one of the only honest politicians in America. Your job is to take what is true, take what the honest politician is saying, and hold Obama and the people in the White House and the establishment accountable. But she can't do it because, hey, I fall for government propaganda, which is why she's in the position she's in. There's a reason I'm not hosting one of those shows on CNN. Well, first of all, I wouldn't want to. I'd probably get better ratings here. But also, I would challenge the fucking bullshit narrative. I would bring it up. If you bring up human rights violators and you bring up Israel in the context of that, oh, the establishment would lose their mind. But it's been proven. What do you want me to do? I didn't make them occupy the Palestinians. I didn't make them do apartheid. So, but look, man, it's sickening. It's grotesque. And I would have no problem with that question. If they were hard on the government and politicians when King Abdullah died, and if they said, Obama, you called him a cautious reformer, that's mental. But they didn't do that. So it's hypocrisy. Whoever our ally is good. Whoever our enemy is bad. That's the end of the conversation. And if you deviate from that, well, obviously, you're the crazy one. Okay. All right, let me take a break. And then when we come back, I got President Trump's chief of staff about what he wants to do with Cuba. And I got a little bit more Bernie Sanders, and I got Donald Trump lost his mind in response to a Jill Stein-initiated recount. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Yeah. the one gon' grab you with the left, the left. I feel like I'm the left, real nigga, left, the left.
I am never gonna get tired of that entrance.
Myself, the left. Please don't make me snap you with the left.
Forget about it. I'm never getting tired of that. That entrance. Okay, here we go. What is President Trump going to do with Cuba? President-elect Donald Trump's chief of staff, Reince Priebus, spoke to Fox News about what he plans on doing when he's in the White House on the issue of Cuba. And the response is bad. I don't know how else to say it. He said, "We're not going to have a unilateral deal coming from Cuba back to the United States without some changes in their government. Repression, open markets, freedom of religion, political prisoners, these things need to change in order to have open and free relationships." And that's what President-elect Trump believes, and that's where it's going to head. Okay, so look, those goals on their own, are they things I agree with? Of course, there shouldn't be repression. I would like it if they opened up their markets more. They started a little bit. They legalized small businesses recently. That's part of the deal Obama cut. But should there be freedom of religion and no more political prisoners? Absolutely. I agree with all those things that they laid out. But the problem is they want to go back to the same thing that exacerbated the issue. So, in other words, they're telling Cuba, if you don't do everything that we want you to do right now, well, then there's no deal, and even the things we already agreed on, we're going to go back on, and that's it. Yeah, but then you don't get that you're going right back to the thing that didn't work, and you're going to make the problem worse? I mean, there's a reason why the Castros are still in power after the fucking super long embargo, because it empirically did not work. If the end goal was, if the idea was, well, we're going to do the embargo, and then obviously the regime will collapse, and then you'll have a more liberal, open, free system or whatever. Well, okay, but we ran the test, and you failed. So this reminds me of like Hillary Clinton and the establishment Democrats. They just got their fucking clocks cleaned in an election, and then they come back and they're like, oh, okay, just, hey, guys, let me just give you my advice on what we should do moving forward. You were the problem. Go sit outside. What are you talking about? Same thing here. Oh, guys, I know that we're the ones who made the Castros, you know, strengthen their grip on Cuba. But anyway, here's what we want to do in order to make it better. So go back to the thing that made it worse. So look, it just turns out, and this isn't the case in every individual instance, but it turns out that with Cuba, what you needed to do is open up the lines of communication, sit down at the table, talk things out, make a deal, and guess what? Some of the things in the deal, we don't like. I mean, that's the nature of international politics. You know, with the Iran deal, I mean, that was a rare instance where any reasonable person pretty much got everything we wanted. With the, you know, guarantee of no creation of nukes, and you have the IAEA inspectors checking regularly, and they live up the ass of the Iranians, and all we had to do was basically lift sanctions on Iran and give them back some of their own money. So, I mean, that was a deal where it was, like, amazing. We got pretty much everything we wanted. But in the Cuba deal, we didn't. But, hey, you know what? It's been positive so far, because like I just said, the Republicans should be thanking Obama, unironically, thanks Obama, because after Obama's deal, Cuba legalized small businesses. That wasn't a thing before. It's a command economy, a centralized economy. The state runs everything. They don't have private businesses. But after Obama's move, they were like, yeah, here's what we're going to do. We're going to legalize small private businesses. I mean, on that day, the Republicans should have came out with just fawning appreciation and adoration. Oh, my God, Mr. President, oh, you did what we could only dream of doing. But look, that's the thing. At the end of the day, that might not even be why the Republicans care about Cuba. Because you know what it really might come down to? They just want Cuba. They're still butthurt over Cuba no longer being a puppet state of the U.S. Because that's what it was. Under Batista, that's what it was. So there was a fascist dictator propped up by the U.S., and Fidel Castro was the one who overthrew him, and we were butthurt over that. Guys, the CIA tried to assassinate Fidel Castro over 600 times. I mean, that there's almost no words for that. That's the most insane fucking thing I've ever heard. So it's not about oh, we want more freedom and democracy for the people of Cuba, because when you controlled the island, you didn't give them freedom and democracy, you gave them a fascist dictator. So what it's probably about is these are people who simply want control of the island again. They want it to be a puppet state, and they want it to be part of the corporatocracy. They want to jack the resources. I mean, it's the same old game. So when Obama actually gets what they claim they want, hey, we just want them to be a little more free and a little more, you know, open up to capitalism. Well, they did that. Well, now we're going to, you know, go in the opposite direction and do the same thing that failed, and then what'll happen? It'll continue to fail. But they'd rather have this, you know, hey, cold shoulder, embargo, block everything with Cuba, no deal. Either that or you do everything we want and you become a puppet state again. Well, that's how children think, and that's how petty, you know, authoritarians think. And the right approach is what Obama did, and it's slowly but surely moving in the direction of getting rid of all the political prisoners, you know, opening up the internet, legalizing more small businesses. So, the Republicans, man, there's nothing that they can't fuck up. Okay, more. We got to go back to Bernie Sanders here because that interview had many special moments. The interview with Dana Bash on CNN. Bernie Sanders snapped at CNN host Dana Bash. This is a really interesting video, so let's watch, and then I want to come back and explain why.
Let's talk about politics here and what's going on in Wisconsin. Yesterday, the Clinton campaign joined an effort started by Green Party candidate Jill Stein for an official recount in Wisconsin. Hillary Clinton's general counsel said that they were doing this without any actionable evidence of hacking the voting system. Do you support that recount as well?
It's taking place. The Green Party has the legal right to do it. We have recounts. Probably almost every election there's a recount. No one expects there to be profound change, but there's nothing wrong with going through the process. The issue right now, it seems to me at this particular moment in American history, is whether Donald Trump is going to keep faith with the promises that he made to the American people. As you'll remember during the campaign, Donna, he talked about the fact that he would take on the pharmaceutical industry and lower drug prices in this country. And I'm a little bit nervous, but I haven't heard too much about that since he's been elected. He said that Medicare should be able to negotiate prices with the drug companies, that we should be able to import cheaper medicine from Canada and other countries. I look forward to doing that. He made a very big deal about saying that he was the only Republican candidate in the primary to say that he would not cut Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Let's see if he keeps his word, and many of us are going to demand that he does keep the promises that he made.
I know you will, but just to follow up on the recount, Trump's senior advisor Kellyanne Conway tweeted this. She said, look who can't accept the election results. Hillary Clinton's supporters called for a vote.
You know, this is exactly the issue. Nobody cares. The Green Party has the legal right. Republicans have requested, I think the governor of North Carolina right now is thinking about doing a recount. That's a legal right. They do it. I don't think that Hillary Clinton, who got 2 million more votes than Mr. Trump in the popular election, thinks that it's going to transform the election. But do people have the legal right to do it? Yeah, we do. The real issue now, in my view, is to focus on what we do to rebuild a disappearing middle class, deal with income and wealth inequality. Let's focus on the issues of importance to the American people.
Bernie Sanders is bae. Okay, I love that because he's asked a question that's like, it's not really all that substantive. It's one of those, like, you know, issue of the week questions, like, ooh, Jill Stein wants a recount, and then Hillary Clinton was like, hey, count me in for that recount, and, you know, look, I don't think it's going to change the election at all, but if you want to do it, whatever, go ahead. I guess there are laws and rules that say if you're within a certain margin, well, then you're legally allowed to get a recount. So whatever, like, it's fine. I guess you could do it, but I don't think it's going to change the results. And I think Bernie's position is similar to mine. And he's like, okay, whatever, yeah, go ahead and do the recount. Who even cares what my take on it is? Like, who cares? But Hillary Clinton already conceded, so are we going to have a conversation about the issues? Or are we not going to talk about the issues? So he's asked a question about the recount, and he's basically like, fucking gross, non-substantive question away from me. And he immediately pivots to like,
All right, now let me tell you about the different plans and issues with Medicare. President-elect Trump said that he was going to do a bunch of good things for the American people, and we're going to hold him accountable. We're going to make sure he lowers drug prices like he said he'd do. We're going to make sure he doesn't cut Social Security.
So he's asked a question that's, like, kind of non-substantive. Although I get, like, I don't think, this is why I love Bernie. I think he's even more hardline than me, because that's a question that I think is acceptable for a CNN host to ask. But when he pivots away from it and starts talking about substance, that should have been her cue to be like, okay, that's his answer. His answer is whatever, do the recount, but it ain't going to change dick. But she, like, pressed once more. And that's when he's like, you know, Donna, let me tell you about it. The American people, their wages need to be raised. We need to get them health care. We need better education. We need to stop the student loan debt crisis. He just goes off on substance. But this, again, this is why Bernie Sanders is great, and this is why, yet again, this is story number two we did today of CNN host Dana Bash being a mess. But that's why she has the job. She has the job because she's not going to rock the boat. She's not going to question the narrative. The U.S. government, when King Abdullah in Saudi Arabia died, it was, oh, my God, he's a cautious reformer. She hook, line, and sinker. You know, same thing for her. She'll be, oh, whatever the government says, I will repeat. When Fidel Castro died, brutal dictator, most brutal ever. And so she frames a question earlier. We covered the story. She framed that question to Bernie Sanders. Is it okay for the president to offer condolences to the family of this brutal dictator who died? Hey, Dana, what did you say when King Abdullah died, who was a brutal dictator, way worse than Castro, and the government called him a cautious reformer? Did you press President Obama on that? You're saying, how dare you say that? No, because whatever power says, you're a stenographer to the government and the establishment and the elite and power. So now the establishment wants you to talk about, oh, the recount. Let's talk about this and make this an issue, even though it's really not going to be one, because nothing's going to fucking happen, even if there is a recount. There's still going to be President-elect Trump. And Bernie's like, that's it. I've had it. I refuse to come on here and fucking have these dumbass horse race conversations. Ooh, Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump? Like, the election's fucking over. Again, have the recount, whatever. But, like, stop pretending, like, oh, this is what people care about. No, like Bernie says, people are like, hey, I can't afford my fucking medical bills. It'd be nice if the media covers the underlying issues as to why that is and maybe pushes the politicians to fix it. But no, in the fucking Twilight Zone world we live in, the one of the few remaining honest politicians in the country has to press the media host on substance. It's supposed to be the media pressing him on substance. Hey, Bernie, why is it that the government has abandoned the people on issue X, Y, and Z? Bernie would love that question. Well, you know, Donna, we've been fighting for this, but we have people who are bought by the corporations who are blocking it. These politicians do not look out for the people. She should be pressing him on policy substance. Instead, he flips it and he has to press the media host on policy substance. Like, why are you asking me about a fucking recount? You know my opinion. Whatever, have the recount. It ain't going to change anything. Can we talk about issues? Issues, issues, issues. She's like, yeah, no, anyway, let me press you more on shit that doesn't really matter all that much. It's sad, man. It's sad. But hey, I shouldn't be complaining, because from a very selfish perspective, this is why we do well. This is why we do well, because people turn on CNN and that's what they get. Hey, Bernie, what are your thoughts on a recount? Okay, look, fine, do it, but here's the reality. President Trump made all these promises. We have to hold him accountable and make sure that he does the right thing for working people. Anyway, Bernie, that's nice. Back to the recount. What do the kids say about that nowadays? I believe there's a term for it. People say head ass. Head ass very much. Okay. Okay, now let's go to Donald Trump and Jill Stein. How's that for a weird marriage? So Donald Trump lost his mind on Twitter in response to a recount in some key states initiated by Jill Stein of the Green Party. So first of all, let me just get into that for a second here. What are my thoughts on it? Dude, I'm indifferent. Okay, so you're allowed a recount if you're within a certain margin. They're within that margin, so they're going to get a recount. I file that under whatever. Go ahead and do it, but at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to change anything. Hillary already conceded. Donald Trump's already the transition team, and we're already along in the process. So I think it's a fruitless effort, but if you want to waste your time, be my guest. I'm not going to stop you, and you have the legal right to do it, so whatever. Now, I know that people might not like this response on my part, but I'm just keeping it real and telling you how I see it, that I don't think anything is going to change. I don't think it's going to change. So you want to try it, go ahead, but I don't think anything's going to change. But still, in response to this, Donald Trump's losing his mind, and because how dare you question my authority and me winning. I mean, I won in a landslide in the Electoral College. Yeah, Don, we get it, but here's the issue with that. You know, the way the Electoral College works, the states that you needed to knock off to win, you did. But you didn't win them by large margins. And so some people are saying, I have no idea if it's true or not, but some people are saying, hey, there were irregularities in those states, and let's check into it, blah, blah, blah. By the way, funny how the same people who were, you know, getting angry when Trump said, the election might be rigged and it might be bad, now that the opposite happened and Trump won, all of a sudden they're like, yeah, no, maybe it was rigged and there were some issues. Weren't you just saying rigging was impossible? And vice versa for Trump. Trump was saying, it's rigged, it's rigged, it's rigged. He won. Rigged? I don't know what you mean, rigged. This is the most honest and good election ever. In the United States of America, never rigged. Never a problem in the United States, let me tell you, because I won. And then there's the hypocrisy of him saying with the Electoral College, it's a disaster for democracy. Back in 2012, and then when he wins because of it, he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, about that. Maybe I like it now. So what did he say in response to this recount effort? He went on Twitter and he said, in addition to winning the Electoral College in a landslide, I won the popular vote if you deduct the millions of people who voted illegally. Millions of people voted illegally? Okay, I cannot overstate how wrong that is. That's fucking Looney Tunes. I mean, goodness gracious, you're on Neptune with that thinking. You know where he got that from? InfoWars. Alex Jones. The next president of the United States of America believes shit he reads on InfoWars. What's going to happen when, you know, he stumbles across one of those Inside Job 9/11 movies or documentaries, whatever you want, documentaries. Playing a little loose with that word documentary there. What happens when he stumbles across Sandy Hook was in Inside Job and all that stuff? God, it's hard for me to believe that he's this big of a sucker, but it looks like he may be this big of a sucker. Did you really? You're the president-elect of the United States of America. You just tweeted that there were millions of illegal votes. Guys, you know what the source is? So if InfoWars is where he saw it and where it was most prominently featured. On like the far right fringes of the internet and on conspiracy sites like InfoWars. But they got it from a random Twitter user who, by the way, when actual journalists were like, oh, you appear to be the source of this claim. Can you please provide us with your methodology and your data and how you came to this conclusion? The guy was like, yeah, no, that's not happening. Wait, what? So a random Twitter user says it. InfoWars picks it up. The right-wing fringes pick it up. And then the president is fucking talking about it and saying, yeah, no, I won. It's just that these goddamn illegals came into the country and they voted. There was like a picture going around the internet of like a bunch of buses. They're like the Democrats busing in illegals to vote. Totally made up. It's just a picture of buses. Like, no, this is illegals voting. What? Give me evidence. Give me proof. It's just, I mean, look at the picture. Yeah, it's just a picture of buses. Yeah, but they're illegals voting. It's complete and utter horseshit. Complete and utter horseshit. There's nothing there. The guy also said he made a claim during Obama's term, like first term or going into the second term. He said that Obamacare was registering illegals to vote. Again, totally made up. This is the guy who's the source of this claim. People were like, what does that mean, and do you have evidence? He's like, no, it's true, though. So what you have here is just insane either right-wing liars, or people who are just gullible idiots who heard it anecdotally from somebody else, from a meme or something that somebody created and just made up, and they run with it. And the fucking president of the United States, look, man, This is actually, we're kind of making light of this story here because it just shows how much of an idiot Trump is, but this is dangerous because if you have somebody whisper in his ear some shit that's not true, what's he liable to do? You know, hey, the leader of this country said X, Y, and Z, or they said they want to break up relations. Like, think of the Philippines. What's happening in the Philippines right now with Duterte and how they're moving away from a relationship with the U.S. and they're getting more with China and Russia. How the fuck is President Trump going to handle that? I mean, this guy who believes anything he hears and reacts impulsively, if they tell him, look, man, this guy's threatening us, he threatened Obama, if he threatens Trump, you know, if he says something against Trump and, you know, whatever, it could spark an international incident because this guy, who knows what he'll do? He's a loose cannon and he believes fucking anything. You could probably get Trump to believe that the Philippines is about to attack Florida. Like, so it's just, this is bad. It's a guy who, he honestly believes one of the dumbest conspiracy theories. Like, there are conspiracy theories where some of them, you look at them and you're like, well, that's interesting. Like, that one may have a grain of truth, but let me research it more. This one is, the source is preposterous. InfoWars and then a random Twitter user who was known for saying factually incorrect shit before and didn't provide any methodology or any data. Any fucking Google search, Snopes, Google it and you'll see Snopes. No, wrong. But he repeats it. He brought himself, I would be embarrassed to tweet something with such certainty. That is utter bullshit. But that's what he did, and that's what he does. And this is where we're at in the United States of America right now. Okay. So we do one more, and then we will take our final break. Donald Trump picked his education secretary, and it's basically the worst person ever for that job. Now, you might say, come on, man, that's hyperbole, and you're going too far, and that's not fair. No. This is based on, the facts. So let me break it down for you, and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. He picked Betsy DeVos, and here's the information on her. First of all, she funds the Acton Institute. This is a right-wing think tank. And it is a think tank that has argued, I'm not joking about this, for child labor. She gives money to a conservative think tank that's like, when can we scrap these fucking pesky child labor laws? You know what I'm saying? I mean, little kids, get them to work, am I right? Ha ha, that's right. You gotta teach the kids from a young age responsibility, work ethic. Yeah, great idea. You know, maybe we should go back to the days like when they were in factories and then, you know, they were fucking mangled in machines that they cleaned when other people couldn't clean because their small bodies can fit in there, but the bigger people couldn't fit in there. Maybe we should send them to coal mines, black lung for kids. Why not? Let's give it a shot. So that's the first thing. A little concerning, if I don't say so myself. She also gave $1.45 million to the Michigan GOP to gut regulation of private schools. So they were thinking, okay, look, we have private schools, but we got to make sure they're teaching things that fucking make sense. We can't have them teaching nonsense. So let's have some regulations on the private schools, the charter schools, to make sure everything's okay. She rained cash on the GOP to say, ex nay on the regulations, gay. Let people teach the kids whatever they want. Okay, so let me get this straight. We have the person who's going to be the education secretary. Person that Trump wants for education secretary. This is a person who, first of all, believes more in private schools than public schools and doesn't even want regulation of the private schools. You know what that opens the door to? That opens the door to religious fundamentalists coming in there saying, yeah, the evolution thing, forget about it. Now we're teaching creationism and Adam and Eve. This is bad. All right, let me give you more. She's also a billionaire, the exact person you would want to to run the public schools. She has no education degree, no teaching experience, no experience working in a school environment, never attended public school or state university, never put her own children in public school, does not believe in public school, does not believe in, believes that public school teachers are overpaid. Of course, this is the old canard that actually Governor Snyder or Governor Walker brought up during the subprime mortgage crisis and the Great Recession. Who do they blame for that? Teachers.
You know, these fucking teachers' unions, man, making too much money. You know what I'm saying? God forbid they live a fucking comfortable middle-class lifestyle.
We should gut their pay. But meanwhile, the CEOs who crashed the economy on Wall Street, they can get bonuses even though they failed miserably at their jobs. And the bonuses are funded by taxpayers. That's cool. Teachers, cut their pay. She invested $200 million in Christian schools and organizations. Oh, they're trying to turn America into the Christian Saudi Arabia. Donald Trump, who was by far and away the most non-religious of the Republican candidates, because he's a moron who has to pander to people who are loyal to him, he's like, yeah, I don't care. Here, Christian Saudi Arabia, let an insane fundamentalist take the reins. I don't care. This is going to, guys, this is like, this is bad. I don't think you get how bad this is. And then she also advocates for funneling money out of public education into for-profit Christian-based education. This is, again, the education secretary. And she donated millions of dollars to Trump's campaign. So I wonder why she got this position. Drain the swamp. Drain the swamp. No more lobbyists, unless they're lobbyists for me and people I like, in which case I love the swamp. I want to bathe in the swamp. I want to make love in the swamp. Give me more of the swamp. That's where Trump is right now. Drain the swamp, except for the fact that I love the swamp. And if you donate it to me, yeah, you can have whatever you want. Education secretary, Christian fundamentalist, doesn't even believe in public school, education secretary. Go ahead. Run all the public schools and make all the decisions that will affect the next generation. This may be his worst pick yet. I mean, it's probably a tie between this, Sessions, and Pompeo. But God damn it, man. You know, you heard during the campaign, hey, he's against TPP. Okay, there's a little fucking glimmer of hope. You heard, hey, I'm not going to cut Social Security. Okay, good, better than the other Republicans. But then you get these picks. And then, by the way, you also got picks who said, oh, no, we're the head of the Social Security Administration, and we're in favor of cutting it or privatizing it. And he's like, yeah, no, totally. You can have that position of power. Not good, man. Really not good. Okay, let me take a final break here. When we come back, we got the Chomsker, Noam Chomsky, the Gnomester. And we got a bunch of other stuff, including former sane person Paul Krugman, who I will go after because he's an idiot and an asshole, and I don't like him anymore, and he brought it upon himself. So stay right there, guys. We'll be right back with all that and much more.
Big black boots, long brown hair, said, are you gonna be my girl?
Successfully got a new chair in here. Actually, well, not yet. It's got to be built and everything. But I'm done with climbing the mountain of pillows. If you guys don't know what I'm talking about, look at the unveiling of the Secular Talk Studio. Look at that video. And y'all see what I mean, bitch. So, anywho, let's move along here. Let's go to Noam Chomsky. Haven't spoken about him in a while, but it's good to get his thoughts on the election. Noam Chomsky spoke to journalist Mehdi Hassan about the election, and he had some interesting thoughts on the idea of lesser evilism.
What's your message to those voters today who refuse to vote for Trump or refuse to vote to stop Trump? What's your message to them now that he's won and he's in the White House?
Same as before. I think they're making a bad mistake. First of all, mistake. There are two issues. One is a kind of a moral issue. Do you vote against the greater evil if you don't happen to like the other candidate? The answer to that is yes, if you have any moral understanding. You want to keep the greater evil out. Second is a factual question. How did Trump and Clinton compare? And I think they're very different. I didn't like Clinton at all, but her positions are much better than Trump's on every issue I can think of.
And I interviewed Slavoj Žižek, the leftist philosopher, Slovenian critic who you've criticized in the past. On this show recently, he said, in a kind of Maoist revolutionary terms, he said, Trump would shake up the system and could end up being a positive force in terms of undermining the status quo. Does he have a point?
Terrible point. That was the same point that people like him said about Hitler in the early 30s.
Because it backfires in the end.
He'll shake up the system in bad ways. What it means is now the left, instead of, if Clinton had won, she had some progressive programs. The left could have been organized to keeping her feet to the fire and pushing them through. What it will be doing now is trying to protect rights that have been, gains that have been achieved from being destroyed. That's completely regressive.
Look at this sellout. No, I'm kidding. To call Noam Chomsky a sellout would be maybe in the top 10 dumbest things anybody's ever said ever. So
I mostly agree with what he's saying there. I'm roughly in the same position that he is. So there are a few main reasons why I rejected that argument, the idea that, well, look, maybe if Trump wins, it's better for the left and better for progressives and better for the future. Because the argument goes, well, then what you'll have is a unified left. The left will be unified, we can rebuild from the ground up, and we can all fight the battle against Trump. Whereas if Hillary won, the argument goes, well, half of the left goes to sleep and doesn't push her on anything, and so then she can get away with doing more corporatist neoliberal bullshit. So the reason why I reject that argument is the left always rolls over. So take, for example, if that theory were true, what would happen under Ronald Reagan? Ronald Reagan was an insanely far right-wing guy. He did horrific things. So, okay, he ended up cutting taxes on the rich and making it 27% the marginal rate. I mean, that exploded income inequality. He deregulated Wall Street. That you know, was part of the downturn of the economy and led to the multiple crashes. It helped along later on by Bill Clinton and helped by George Bush. So, but the argument would be, well, hold on, we got Reagan, he's extreme, therefore the left is going to unify and fight against him. What actually happened? The elected Democrats, the politicians, they all rolled over. Because right-wingers know how to fight, left-wingers are little bitches. So the left rolled over and Reagan got to do whatever he wanted, he ran roughshod. George W. Bush! Okay, again, the idea that an extreme candidate would lead to a progressive unification and backlash, what did the Democrats do under George Bush? They gave him everything he fucking wanted. The only thing they blocked was privatization of Social Security. Everything else, he got the Iraq War, he got the Afghanistan War, he got the Patriot Act. Ugh, the fucking Patriot Act. So, again, that theory of an extreme character unifies the left, it's just incorrect. The opposite is true. The evidence shows the opposite is true. When you have a right-winger, an extreme character in there, they're strong characters, and they run roughshod over the weak bitch-ass Democrats. I wish it were the case that a right-wing leader leads to a strong progressive backlash, and then the progressives take over, but it didn't happen. It doesn't happen. So, you know, you got Obama, for example, after Bush. Obama, very centristy, you know, neoliberal, hawkish guy. So now, to get to the idea of lesser evilism, what Chomsky's saying there is, look, man, none of us wanted that choice, but that's the choice we had. Where I disagree with him, though, is and you'd have to ask him and get more detail on this, but he made it seem like he would have voted for Hillary in any state. And, in fact, he said in a previous thing before the election, yeah, I would vote against the Republican candidate. But I'm a little more nuanced than him. I'm totally fine with, if you were in a safe state, if you're in California, if you're in New York like me, I voted for Jill Stein. Why? Because Jill Stein was better, and I know she had no chance of winning, but my vote doesn't count in New York because my state was going to Hillary no matter what. Just like if you live in Texas and you want to vote for Jill Stein. Yeah, go ahead, vote for Jill Stein because that state is going to the Republican no matter what. I mean, people were saying, oh, maybe that's not the case. No, nonsense. Of course it was going to go for the Republican. So if you're in a safe state, I'm fine with third party votes, but I vote for the third party in the safe state, eyes wide open, knowing that if I was in a swing state, yeah, I would suck it up and vote for the lesser evil because those were the only ones that had a chance of winning. It was either going to be Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. That's it. The idea that, oh, maybe Gary Johnson might pull off a miracle or Jill Stein, it wasn't going to happen. So it's just a matter of fact that one of those two was going to win. And so you have to ask yourself who's worse and who's better. And even if you say, well, look, I despise Hillary for a million and one reasons, but do the calculation. Is she still less bad than the other guy? Because if you're given a choice between bad and less bad, you'd be crazy not to pick less bad. Now, you could try to opt out of the game and say, well, I don't want to play anymore. Okay, but then you're just dodging the issue. It's not some statement of moral superiority. It's a statement of that question is uncomfortable and I'm not going to face it. So I'm not going to answer that. Okay, well then just know you're dodging the question, and that's what it comes down to. Now some people would argue, well, he's not as you know, Trump is actually the lesser evil. I just explained to you why I don't think that is. Well, I explained to you why when you get a right-wing character, the Democrats are bitches and roll over. But the reason why I think Trump actually is the worst evil is the same reasons that everybody gives that nobody should brush under the rug because they're true. Climate change. Climate change is a fucking global catastrophe. With Hillary Clinton, you have somebody who probably wasn't going to push in the right direction much, but she wasn't going to actively go in the wrong direction, where Trump's already working on ripping up the Paris Agreement on day one. That is a disaster. He wants no regulation on the coal industry and the oil industry, and no regulation on fracking. Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, pushed fracking around the world. She's for more regulations of fracking than Donald Trump is, that's for sure. She's for keeping the Paris Agreement. He isn't. He said it was a Chinese hoax. Now, he softened on it recently, but I didn't want to roll the dice on a guy who sometimes believes climate change, sometimes doesn't believe in climate change, and doesn't want to do dick about it anyway. I would rather have the person who's not going to actively push us in the wrong direction. Because if you disagree with that, I don't think you get the idea of false equivalence, because that actually is a false equivalence if you say they're equally bad or something like that. They're not on that issue. They're just not. And again, if you downplay this, then I don't think you understand how serious a threat climate change is. So that was one of the big ones as to why, yeah, I think she's the lesser evil, the idea of the Supreme Court. Now, again, I'm mad at Hillary because she wants the same thing as Obama. Give me centrist judges and I'll call it a day. Give me Merrick Garland. Merrick Garland, who's a centrist judge who on some issues is conservative, like criminal justice issues, he's conservative. Okay, I hate that, but he's significantly better on race issues, like the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, for example, which was recently gutted. He's way better on abortion and social issues, gay rights, than whoever fucking numbnuts Trump is going to pick when he repeatedly said, I want the next Antonin Scalia, who's a crazy person, who did untold damage to the country, who said blacks belong in slower track schools, is a guy who literally believes in the devil. He supported torture on the Supreme Court. It's not equal. That's not equal. Hillary's better on that issue. It's not equal. Again, taxes. So Trump says, I'm going to cut the top rate to 32% was one of his proposals, 28% was another. That's the Reagan rates. You know what that's going to do? That's going to explode income inequality way worse than it is today. He said, I want to lower wages. Hillary, I think worst case scenario, would keep the minimum wage as is. I mean, maybe, hopefully she would raise it, but, you know, worst case scenario, it stays as is. He says, I want to lower wages. You know, he says he wants to make the taxes like Bush's rates on steroids. We know what happened. There was a giant economic crash after that. Hillary, worst case scenario with Hillary, she would keep Obama's rates the same. 39% marginal rate on the rich. Trump wants to cut it to 32% or 28%, depending on which day you talk to him. And he's got Republicans in the House and the Senate who can get that done. So the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. On regulation, he said he wants to eliminate the EPA and the FDA. Now, he's not going to formally do it, but he's already appointed. He wanted Rick Perry to fucking head the Department of Energy. Why? Because Rick Perry said, I want to eliminate the Department of Energy. So you head people to lead the regulatory bodies who don't believe in that regulatory body. And then they say, industry, do whatever you want. So eliminate the FDA food police, he said. Really? So fucking salmonella, E. coli outbreaks, listeria, all that? Meh, whatever, hands off. I don't believe in government regulation much. That is way, way worse than Hillary Clinton, even though I despise Hillary Clinton. And again, this is what Chomsky's alluding to here. The Muslim ban. As bad as Hillary Clinton is there any chance, a 2% chance, a 3% chance, she would say, you know what, we're going to ban all Muslims from coming to the U.S. Trump did say that, and there's a chance he might do it. Now, maybe he won't, and I'm hopeful he won't. I'm hopeful that was just campaign rhetoric, and there's some signs he's not going to do it. But I didn't want to roll the dice, and neither should you. Deport all undocumented immigrants? By the way, I get it. Obama broke the record for deportations. There is a fundamental difference, though. Obama says, Hillary says, and this has been the Democratic position forever, yeah, I'm fine with deporting criminals, but I'm not going to take dreamers and ship them out. I'm not going to take people who are hardworking, who've been here for a while. For them, we want a path to citizenship. That is not what Trump says, and that's not what the Republicans say. That's not what they believe. They believe, no, let's get rid of all of them to the extent that we can. Now, maybe he goes back on that, too, which would be great, but I didn't want to roll the dice, and neither should you. The only area where I think Chomsky is wrong is Trump is better on two issues, TPP
I actually believe him more than I believe Hillary Clinton, although, again, the jury's out on that because he could do what Hillary Clinton, what I think she would have done, which is change a few provisions and then pass it and call it something new. So he might do that, but I do think overall I think he's better on that issue because I have more hope that he won't pass it versus her. And on the issue of Russia and Syria, he doesn't want to escalate with Russia and he doesn't want to get more involved in Syria. So I disagree with Chomsky that there aren't some issues where Trump is better. I think there are some issues where Trump is better. But yeah, the totality of their beliefs and their policies and what they want to implement, I do think that she was a lesser evil. And I do think we need to be really tough on neoliberals like Hillary Clinton. We need to be really tough on the establishment wing of the Democratic Party. But we also need to, as we do that and as we hold them accountable in a direct way, we also need to make sure we don't make shitty arguments and buy into the idea of false equivalence. Because there is a strain of the left that's doing that now, where they'll try to say, like, Obama and Trump are going to be equal. Are you? Not even close, dude. Not even close. So, again, there's some issues where Trump is actually better, perhaps TPP. But when it comes to, I don't know, the fact that Obama did the Cuba deal, would Donald Trump have done the Cuba deal? He already said he wants to fucking get out of this one. Obama did the Cuba deal. Obama did the Iran deal. Obama changed the overtime rule so that people making under $47,000 get overtime pay by law when it used to be $23,000. Obama continually is freeing nonviolent drug offenders in his second term. He's broken the record for pardons and commutations. So, okay, it ain't equal. Those are things that are great that Trump would never do. Now, that doesn't mean you can't hold Obama accountable when he's dead wrong, because he is dead wrong and Guantanamo Bay is still open. I would shut that down with an executive order today and say, take me to court if you disagree, bitch. He should shut down Guantanamo Bay. He should stop drone bombing 7 different fucking countries. You know, he shouldn't be as in bed with Wall Street as he is. He needs to stop pushing for TPP. So there are areas where I vehemently disagree with Obama, and I will fucking crack skulls on those issues, and I'm not taking no for an answer. But all the facts matter. All the details matter. All the policy proposals matter. And I think when you do the math on it, you come out very clearly that somebody like Hillary Clinton, if you gave her a test, 0 to 100, she might get a 27. But Donald Trump probably gets an 8 or something like that. Obama, maybe he gets a 36. All this is still an F, by the way. Granted. F. But, again, Donald Trump probably gets like an 8. Agree with him on TPP if he sticks to his word. Agree with him on Russia and Syria. Maybe a few other issues we can be hopeful. But the majority of his picks, the majority of his policies, picking Jeff Sessions to be the attorney general who says good people don't smoke marijuana, who said a white civil rights attorney was a traitor to his race. The totality of his beliefs, the totality of his policies, the totality of his picks, it ain't pretty. And Noam Chomsky's right when he said it's a terrible point to argue, no, Trump's the lesser evil because the system will break and you'll unify the left. But that doesn't happen. Every time we get a fucking right-winger, an extreme Reagan or Bush, the elected Democrats rolled over. They rolled over and they let them do whatever they want to do. So this magical thinking of, no, this time it's different, and when there's a strong Republican, now the liberals will unify, there's zero evidence for that historically. They always roll over. So what we need to do is muster up the strength to fight and fight either one. But it would make sense if we were fighting against the person who was less bad. Now we're fighting against the person who's more bad, who's worse, and we're in a fucking pickle. So I mostly agree with Noam Chomsky there. I think his argument is the one that makes the most sense, and it's kind of the one I believed all along, with the only hedges being, I think it's fine to vote for third parties in safe states, as I did and as I will continue to do. The few other little things I mentioned where I disagree with him there, like Trump being better on a few issues. You can say, hey, those are really big issues. But overall, when you do the math, I don't think they outweigh the ones where he's objectively worse. Okay. Now let's go to Paul Krugman. Former sane person Paul Krugman decided to tweet a little bit about Donald Trump, and shocker,
since Donald Trump's rhetoric is now anti-outsourcing, guess who's suddenly for it? Paul Krugman. This is why I call him a former sane person. Now he's lost his mind, and he was so pro-Hillary Clinton, I think he had a designated position in her administration to sniff her farts. The articles he wrote were honestly some of the dumbest articles I've ever read, the ones that were pro-Hillary Clinton. He wrote articles like, Hillary Clinton is fundamentally honest. When I actually did that story, I almost left it out and didn't prep it and didn't do it because I thought, oh, that's too stupid for me to respond to. But I ended up doing it. But anyway, the guy's still fucking, he lost it because Donald Trump won. So listen to what he said. The story of U.S. manufacturing is basically one of high productivity growth, allowing demand to be met with ever fewer workers. Nothing policy can do will bring back those lost jobs. The service sector is the future of work, but nobody wants to hear it. So do you understand the argument he's making there? He's saying, well, I mean, come on, look, outsourcing jobs, losing our factory jobs and our manufacturing, it's inevitable. That's his argument. It's inevitable. I mean, it's going to happen, so, and nobody wants to hear it, but hey, the future of the U.S. is service sector jobs. Okay, Paul, you do know service sector jobs mostly pay shit, right? You do know it's hard for people to live with those jobs, right? But his argument is, because Trump won, and he's got to be anti-Trump, his argument is, well, maybe you live a shit life. Maybe you live a shit life, and maybe you make no money, and maybe you suck it up about the fact that your job got outsourced. And again, he's portraying it as a natural evolution. That indeed is not true. So when you look at these deals, when you look at NAFTA, when you look at CAFTA, when you look at the World Trade Organization more broadly, when you look at permanent normal trade relations with China, when you look at TPP, those deals are actually, you ready for this? I hope you're sitting down. Very protectionist. You're like, hold on, Kyle, wait a second. That's not protectionist. What are you talking about? Protectionism is, you know, making sure you protect the people in your country when you craft these deals. Yeah, but when I say they're protectionists, they are protectionists for one class, the elites and the investor class. And so there's all types of copyright and patent rules and laws, and they craft them so it is very kind to the investors and very kind to the elite and the establishment. So it's kind to one class of people, but they're drafted specifically not to be kind to the working class. So you lose your job. You have a manufacturing job. You have a factory job where you make a middle-class living, and it's some plant in fucking Ohio. That's nice. We're going to take that job and ship it to fucking Bangladesh or ship it to Mexico or ship it any of a number of places where the owners of the company, they could pay somebody fucking, you know, a third what they pay you so they can make more profit. And meanwhile, you're out of a job, you're unemployed, you're miserable, and the economy, the unemployment rate goes up here, and, you know, the middle class stagnates here, and overall people get screwed. But see, again, he frames it like, well, I don't know why these people are so mad. This is an inevitable consequence of the system. Well, no, it's not inevitable. They chose to do it. They wrote those deals, and they wrote them with a purpose. It's a race to the bottom. We want to pay less for our labor because labor is a cost. I don't care that they're human beings and they might want to live a fruitful, fucking happy life. I don't care. Labor is a cost, so pay as little as we can for that, and we make as much money as possible, and it's us and our investors who works out well for. Well, Paul, that's not inevitable. So he says there's no policy that could bring these jobs back. To steal a phrase, wrong. How about tariffs? Let's start there. How about tariffs? Now, then he would argue, yeah, but that might spark a trade war and this and that. Okay, well, wait. There's a way you can bring back tariffs if you go about it the right way and you have good negotiators and you sit down at the table and you're reasonable with these countries that you have trade deals with. There's a way to bring back tariffs and not spark a trade war. Of course there is. Now, I don't trust Trump to do that because I think he's a buffoon and I don't think he's actually good at negotiating because his business career is a disaster even though he pretends it's the opposite. But there is a way to renegotiate these deals. There is a way to make it better for the American people. There is a way to bring back manufacturing. I mean, we have a fucking green technology revolution just waiting to happen, renewable energy. There's a revolution right there. There's a bunch of jobs right there. But again, he's saying, no, it's inevitable. Lost all the jobs. You lose all the jobs, and you're going to have to get used to your shitty service sector job. Why is he saying that? Because Trump's rhetoric is anti-TPP and anti-trade. So he's like, now I'm pro it. I'm in favor of it, and if you disagree, you're an idiot, and you... And Trump's a moron, so I'm against it because he's for it. No, but now you're an idiot. Because what you're saying is, yeah, I don't care. Leave the middle class behind. Leave working people behind. And by the way, this will only solidify Republican victories. If the establishment Democrats are like, yeah, no, we are proudly the party of outsourcing now. Yeah. Everybody in the country will be like, that's nice. Anyway, we're going to vote for Republicans now, too. Because you're promising to continue to fuck them over. You're promising to continue to fuck them over. So, I dude, stop. Paul, you sound like an idiot. I get it. You're an economist. I get it. So you probably come up with some high-minded rationalization. And by the way, look, I'm not 100% anti-trade. Trade is a normal part of having a fucking global economy, having an economy, period. We have some things in this country that other people need, and they can't get it anywhere else. Okay, we make a deal. Vice versa, too. Hey, there's products that we don't make in this country. We don't have the ability to make it, so we got to import it from other countries. We got to do trade. I'm in favor of trade, but trade out of necessity. And reasonable trade that isn't simply deals that benefit the rich and benefit the owner class and screw over the workers. We didn't need to outsource all those jobs, and they don't need to continue to be outsourced. Again, another thing you could do, no policy can fix that. Yeah, it can. How about you say, oh, if you outsource jobs, you pay a much higher tax rate than if you create jobs here. You create jobs here, we'll give you a tax incentive. If you create jobs over there, well, we're going to tax it so that the cost of labor would be more expensive there than it is if you set up a shop here. Kyle, that'll raise prices. It'll be negligible. They've done studies on this, man. If you pay people at Walmart a living wage, for example, the average good goes up a few cents. I mean, is it worth it? Talk to somebody. Hey, if you pay just a few more cents and that person gets to fucking put their kids through school and can afford the fucking light bill, are you in favor of that? People say, of course, people already say, overwhelming majority, raise the minimum wage. Oh, 80% of people. So, Paul, you're just wrong. What do you mean the jobs are inevitable? It's inevitable. Now, the only argument that makes a little bit of sense that people make is, yeah, but Kyle, the point is, so even if they bring the jobs back, eventually everything is going to be replaced with automation. Yeah, that's true. Eventually automation is going to take over. But that's the case for probably most jobs. So should we not give a fuck about what happens in the meantime before that happens and continue to fuck over people? No, fucking renegotiate the deals, give people a decent life here in the United States of America, give them nice middle-class jobs, and then we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. Now, the real answer for automation, when automation takes over and everybody's losing their job, and that actually is a natural evolution process with better technology and artificial intelligence and all that stuff, when that actually happens, the answer is you have to retool the way the system functions. So in other words, you have to make it so that like people are assigned an artificial intelligence machine, for lack of a better word, and they do the work and you get the benefits. You get the, you know, they're productive and you reap the rewards. So you have your AI machine, you have your AI machine, and then they do the work and then you make the money. Either we go down that road or we just exacerbate income inequality further and only the rich and the elite control the technology, and you have increasing unemployment, increasing unrest, and then eventually some sort of disastrous war-like sci-fi movie situation where people are so left behind and the robots have so taken over that, you know, it's just unsustainable. So, but that, and Stephen Hawking's spoken about this too. I'm pointing it off like it's my idea. It's not my idea. Stephen Hawking said, we got to retool the way we do it, and eventually automation will take over, but what path we go down when that happens is big. Are we going to go down the path of more of a social democracy-like system where, you know, a socialist, more socialist-y system where you get the fruits of the labor from your machine, or is all the fruits of the labor going to go to the rich? In which case, revolution and fucking crazy shit will happen. So now I'm getting off in the weeds here, but point is, the only point he has is on automation, where eventually all the jobs are going to be gone anyway, so, you know, we're going to have to address that. But I differ from him because I'm not using that as an excuse to continue to fuck over people today with factory jobs, because it's not inevitable. It's possible to protect those jobs for people. It's possible to set up policy that looks out for American workers. And he's pretending like that's not even an option. It is, Paul. You just don't want to take it because it sounds like Donald Trump is going to take it. Okay. I am running out of time. Let me see what I did here. I got 3 minutes. 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, yeah, I'm out of time. I want to do more stories here, but I can't. I got four left, and I'm going to get to these tomorrow, and I think you're going to enjoy them all. I got religious fundamentalists, and I have somebody from the Southern Poverty Law Center makes one of the worst arguments you've ever heard, and some earth-shattering hypocrisy from First Amendment-loving conservatives. So I got all that tomorrow. I promise you all that tomorrow, and I'm going to have more for you. And I'm fucking happy to be back, dog. So, much love. We'll see everybody then. And you'll tell me, man. I'm still tweaking with the setup here a little bit, trying to make the show improve more and more in our new studio. Still loving the new studio. By the way, if you're interested in donating, it's GoFundMe.com/secular talk. So check that out. I'm not sure if we're at our goal yet, but we're close. All right, much love, everybody. I will talk to you tomorrow. Mwah. Peace.